this episode of the Mystery Kids Podcast, we'll be talking about the man who sold the Eiffel Tower twice.
Welcome to the Mystery Kids Podcast.
Welcome, Mystery Kids Podcast, to a new episode. I am so excited to hear from you and to be with you again this beautiful Easter weekend. I hope you had a wonderful March. I can't believe Easter's already in March, and here we go. Here we go again. But first off, I want to shout out to all my March birthdays. Love March. Hope you had a fantastic birthday. I will say this is probably one of the smallest amount of birth dates that I have on my calendar as I'm like looking at all the months. It seems like, I'm pretty sure that, March is my lowest amount of birthdays. So there's only a few of you, so we got to celebrate you. So happy birthday to Dominic, Sam, Kate, Fabi, Blair, Ari, Jackson, Boterius, Kenny King, Wyatt P, Ada, and Anna. I hope you had a happy, happy birthday. I just want to give you a heads up, new to patrons, if you are a patron or a subscriber for $5 a month, first of all, thank you so much. You help keep this podcast going. I'm a one-woman show. I do all the Instagram. I do all the graphics, everything. I do it all the editing, all the writing, all the finding the articles, research. I do this all by myself. So thank you so much for supporting, even if it's a short period of time or a long period of time. I just want to tell you how grateful I am for supporting this little podcast. So I, as a thank you, do 3 bonus episodes a month at $5 a month, which is honestly unheard of in the like Patreon podcast community. Most people do a podcast or maybe 2, but for 3 at that level, I just hope you get your money's worth. And I have been doing that for 3 years now? So there is so many back episodes, especially if you go onto the Patreon app. There are so many back episodes, and they've updated the Patreon app to work even better. So go jump on, go be a patron, even if it's for a month or two, to just go catch up on all the great content there. I really hope that you just love all the content that's going forward. Anyways, that was the complete sidetracked mission. I am starting to do, instead of Monster of the Month, I am updating it to Myth or Mystery of the Month. So I just got this new book. Instead of the Big Book of Monsters, we are now going to be excerpts from the Book of Mysteries, Magic, and the Unexplained, or the Big Book of Monster Legends. And these are little story excerpts from these specific books. So this month I picked out the familiars, and we talked about all about familiars in the newest episode. So go check that out. That's for my wonderful patrons and sponsors, and get all that good bonus content. Even more exciting, I got an amazing email from one of our listeners, and that just makes my heart so happy. Sometimes I miss things, and like you guys will send me a message somewhere and I miss them. I try really hard to answer everybody's things, but I get messages from all over the place. But this one I happened to see, and I am so excited that I got it. So I got this email. It says, "Dear Tess, my name is Emery. I'm 10 years old from Kaysville, Utah." Shout out to Kaysville, Utah. I'm from Layton originally, Utah. So, hi. I really, really liked Mystery Kids Podcast. I've listened to all the episodes. Some of my favorite episodes are Ghost Ships, Mermaids, and the Octopus Stories. I had an idea for an episode. The name of a guy named Victor Lustig. He stole the Eiffel Tower twice without owning it. He even escaped from prison. Thank you for making such fun episodes. From Emery F. And so thank you so much, Emery. I am 100%, I was like, done doing it right now. This is your episode. That just made my whole day. So thank you so much. And I cannot wait to learn about this Victor Lustig, little thief that he is, who stole a whole Eiffel Tower. Man, he must be some sort of thief. So let's dive in and learn all about this crazy story today. This story specifically comes from the Smithsonian Magazine, and it's an article written by Jeff Mayish. And so it's called The Man Who Sold the Eiffel Tower Twice. Now, Count Victor Lustig was an American's greatest con man, but what was his true identity? So the air was crisp as a $100 bill on April 27th, 1936. A southwesterly breeze filled the bright white sails of the pleasure boat sailing across the San Francisco Bay. Through the cabin window of a ferry boat, a man studied the horizon. His tired eyes were hooded and his dark hair swept backwards, his hands and feet locked in iron chains. Behind a curtain of gray mist, he caught his first dreadful glimpse of Alcatraz Island. Count Victor Lustig, 46-year-old at the time, was America's most dangerous con man, a lengthy criminal career. His sleight-of-hand tricks and his get-rich-quick schemes had rocked the jazz-era America and the rest of the world. In Paris, he sold the Eiffel Tower in an audacious confidence game, not only once, but twice. Finally, in 1935, Lustig was captured after masterminding a counterfeit banknote operation so vast that it threatened to shake the confidence in the American economy. A judge in New York sentenced him to 20 years on Alcatraz. Just 20 years? Really? Okay. I mean, it's Alcatraz. It's basically like Azkaban, but the American version without the Dementors. But like 20 years? That just did... We'll find out more. Okay, Lustig was unlike any other inmate to arrive on the rock. He dressed like a manatee idol. Possessed a hypnotic charm. He spoke five languages fluently and evaded the law like a figure from fiction. In fact, the Milwaukee Journal described him as a storybook character. One Secret Service agent wrote this, that Lustig was as elusive as a puff on a cigarette smoke and as charming as a young girl's kiss. While the New York Times editorialized, he was not the hand-kissing type of bogus count, too keen for that. Instead of theatrical, he was always reserved, dignified, nobleman. Now, the fake title of Count was just the tip of Lustig's deception. Now, he used 47 aliases and carried dozens of fake passports. He created a web of lies so thick that even today, his true identity remains shrouded in mysteries. On his Alcatraz paperwork, prison officials called him Robert V. Miller, which was just another one of his pseudonyms. The con man had always claimed to hail from a long line of aristocrats who owned European castles, yet newly discovered documents revealed a more humble beginning. In the prison interviews, he told investigators he was born in the Austria-Hungarian town of Hostene on January 4th, 1890. The village is around the Barocco clock tower in the shadow of the Kroknes Mountain. It's now part of the Czech Republic. And during his crime spree, Lustig had boasted that his father, Ludwig, was a burgomaster, or the mayor of the town. But in recently uncovered prison papers, he describes his father and mother as the poorest peasant people who raised him in a grim house made from stone. Lustig claimed he stole to survive, but only from the greedy and dishonest. So he's basically saying he's Robin Hood. He's like, it's fine. I'm stealing, but I'm stealing from like dishonest people. So it's fine. Now, more textured accounts of Lustig's childhood can be found in various true crime magazines of the time, informed by his criminal associates and investigators. In the early 1900s, as a teenager, Lustig scampered up the criminal ladder, progressing from a panhandler to a pickpocket to a burglar to a street hustler. Now, according to True Detective Mysteries magazine, he perfected every card trick known, palming, skipping cards of the deck, dealing from the bottom. And by the time he reached adulthood, Lustig could make a deck of cards do everything but talk. Now, first-class passengers aboard transatlantic ships became his first victim. The newly rich were very easy pickings. When Lustig arrived in the United States at the end of World War I, the Roaring Twenties were in full swing, and money was changing hands at a fevered pace. Lustig quickly became known to detectives in 40 America cities as the Scarred, thanks to a livid 2.5-inch gash on his left cheekbone, a souvenir from a love rival in Paris. Yet Lustig was considered a smoothie who had never held a gun and enjoyed butterflies. Records show that he was just 5'7" tall and weighed 140 pounds. His most successful scam was Rumian Money Box. Now, it was a small box fashioned from cedar wood with complicated rollers and brass dials. Lustig claimed the contraption could copy banknotes using radium. The big show he gave to his victims was sometimes aided by a sidekick named Dapper Dan Collins, described in the New York Times as a former circus lion tamer and death-defying bicycle rider. Lustig's repertoire also included fake horse regimes, feigned seizures during business meetings, and bogus real estate investments. Now, these capers made him public enemy, and it made him a millionaire. America in the 1920s was infested with such confident rackets operated by smooth-talking immigrants like Charles Ponzi, a namesake, it's called the Ponzi Scheme. These European con artists, they were professionals who called their victims marks instead of suckers, and who acted not like thugs, but like gentlemen. Now, according to the crime magazine True Detective, Lustig was a man whose society took one hand and the underworld by the other, a flesh and blood Jekyll and Hyde, yet he treated all women with respect. Now, on November 3rd of 1919, he married a pretty Kansan named Roberta Norrit. A memoir by Lustig's late daughter recalls how Lustig raised a secret family and whom he lavished all his ill-gotten gains. The rest he spent on gambling, and he had another multi-million dollar business on the side. Then in the 1925, he embarked upon what swindling experts called the Big Store. Lustig arrived in Paris in May of that year. Now, according to the memoir of a U.S. Secret Service agent named James Johnson, there Lustig commissioned state stationery carrying the official French government seal. Next, he presented himself on the front desk of the Hotel de Crillon in the Stone Palace on the Palace de la Concorde. From there, pretending to be French government official, Lustig wrote at the top people of French scrap metal industry, inviting them to a hotel for a meeting. Now, because of engineering faults, costly repairs, and political problems, I cannot discuss the tearing down of the Eiffel Tower. It's become mandatory, he reportedly told him quietly in his hotel room. The tower will be sold to the highest bidder, he announced. His audience was just captivated, and the bids flew out. It was a scam Lustig pulled off more than once, sources said. Amazingly, the con man liked to boast of his criminal achievements and even penned a list of rules for would-be swindlers, and they're still circulating around today. So this is his 10 commandments of the con. 1, be a patient listener. It is this, not fast talking, that gets con man his coups. 2, never look bored. 3, wait for the other person to reveal any political opinions and then immediately agree with him. 4, let the other person reveal religious views and then have the same views. Okay, never discuss illness unless some special concern is shown. Never pry into a person's personal circumstances, they'll tell you eventually, and never boast. Just let your importance be quietly obvious. Never be untidy. So these were his rules, and like many career criminals, it was greed that led to Lustig's demise. On December 11th, 1928, businessman Thomas Kearns invited Lustig to his Massachusetts home to discuss an investment. Lustig crept upstairs and he stole $16,000 from a drawer. Okay, you know you got a lot of money when you got $16,000, especially in that time, just laying around. So, such a barefaced theft was out of character for this con man, and Curran screamed to the police. Next, Lustig had the audacity to trick a Texas sheriff with his money box, and later gave him counterfeit cash, which attracted the attention of the Secret Service. Mr. Lustig was a top man in the modern world of crime. He wrote another agent called Frank Seckler. He was the only one I'd ever heard of who swindled the law. Yet, it was Secret Service agent Peter A. Rubano who vowed to put Lustig behind bars. Rubano was a heavyset Italian-American with a double chin, sad eyes, and endless ambition. Born and raised in Bronx, Rubano had made his name by trapping an notorious gangster, Ignazio the Wolf Lupio. Rubano delighted in seeing his name in the newspapers, and he would dedicate many years to catching Lustig. When the Austrians entered the counterfeit banknote business in 1930, Lustig fell under Rubano's crosshairs. Teaming up with a gangland forager, William Watts, Lustig created banknotes so flawless they even fooled bank tellers. Lustig Watts notes were the super notes of the era, says Joseph Bowling, chief judge of the American Numismatic Association, a specialist who authenticates notes. Now, Lustig daringly chose to copy $100 bills, those scrutinized most by bank tellers, and became like some other government issuing money rivalry with like the United States Treasury. A judge later commented, "It was feared that the run of fake bills this large would wobble the international confidence in the dollar." Now, catching the count became this cat and mouse game for Rubano and the Secret Service. Lustig traveled with a trunk of disguises and could transform easily from a rabbi, a priest, a bellhop, or a porter. He could dress like a baggage man. He could escape any hotel in a pinch and even take his luggage with him. But the net was closing in. Lustig finally felt the tug on the velvet collar of his Chesterfield coat on New York street corner on May 10th, 1935. A voice ordered, hands in the air, Lustig studied the circle of men surrounding him and noticed Agent Rubano, who led him away in handcuffs. It was a victory for the Secret Service agents, but not for long. On Sunday before Labor Day, September 1st, 1935, Lustig escaped from an inescapable federal detention center in Manhattan. I just want to say, anytime you say something inescapable, someone's going to escape it. Just like, you know, a certain boat might be unsinkable. It's going to sink. So don't give it such perfect, like, oh, it can never happen. Because there it goes. It'll happen. He was fashioned a rope from bed sheets, cut through his bars, and swung from the window like an urban Tarzan. When a group of onlookers stopped and pointed, the prisoner took a rag from his pocket and pretended to be a window cleaner. Ugh. Landing on his feet, Lustig gave his audience a polite bow and sprinted away like a deer. Police dashed to his cell. They discovered a handwritten note on his pillow, an extract from Victor Hugo's Les Miserables. He allowed himself to be led in promise. Jean Valjean had his promise, even to a convict, especially to a convict. It may give the convict confidence and guide him on the right path. Law was not made by God, and man can be wrong. Lustig evaded the law until Saturday night, September 28, 1935. In Pittsburgh, the dashing crook ducked into a waiting car on the city's north side. Watching from hiding position, FBI G.K. Firestone gave the signal to the Pittsburgh Secret Service agent, Fred Grubber. The two federal officers leapt into their car and gave chase. For nine blocks, their vehicles rode neck and neck, engines roaring. When Lustig's driver refused to stop, the agents ran their cars into his, locking their wheels together. Sparks flew. The cars crashed to a halt. The agents pulled their service weapons and threw open the doors. And according to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Lustig told his captors, "Well, boys, here I am." Count Victor Lustig was hauled before the judge of New York in November 1935. His pale, lean face was sturdy, and his tapering white hands rested on the bar before the bench. Observed by a reporter from the New York Herald Tribune. Just before sentencing, another journalist overheard a Secret Service agent telling Lustig, "Count, you're the smoothest con man that ever lived." Now, as soon as he stepped onto the Alcatraz Island, prison guards searched Lustig's body for a concealed watch springs, a razor blade, hosed him down with freezing seawater. They marched him along the main corridor between the cells known as Broadway in his birthday suit. And there was a chorus of howls and whistles and the clinging of metal cups against the bard. So he was everything in the category of crime, including the burning of Chicago. Whatever his true identity, the cold weather took a toll on prisoner 300. By December 7th, 1946, Lustig had made a staggering 1,192 medical requests and filed 507 prescriptions. The prison guards believed he was faking, and his illness was all part of his escape plan. They even found torn bed sheets in his cell, signs of his expert rope making. According to medical reports, Lustig was inclined to magnify physical complaints and constantly complaining of real and imaginary ills. He was transferred to a secure medical facility in Springfield, Missouri, where doctors soon realized he was not faking. Now there he died from complications arising from pneumonia. Now somehow Lustig's family kept his death a secret for 2 years until August 31st, 1949. But Lustig's Houdini-like departure from this earth was not even his greatest deception. In March of 2015, a historian named Thomas Endell from Lustig's hometown of Houston began a tireless search for biographical information about the town's most famous citizen. He searched through records rescued from Nazi bonfires, pored over electoral rolls and historical documents. He must have attended school in Holstein. Endell reasoned with the Holstein Bulletin, yet he's not even mentioned in the list of pupils attending the local primary school. Now, after much searching, Endell concluded, there is not a scrap of evidence that Lustig was ever born. Now, we may never know the true identity of Count Victor Lustig, but we do know for certain that the world's most flamboyant conman died at 8:30 p.m. on March 11th, 1947. On his death certificate, a clerk wrote this for his occupation, apprentice salesman. That was such a good article, and I knew trying to like summarize it on my own would not do it justice. So what a fantastic story, Emery. Thank you for sending that to me. I hope that just was so interesting to you. I hope you have a fantastic Easter weekend. We'll see you next time on the Mystery Kids Podcast.
Thanks for listening.